they'll also be doing the exchange then, whereby they will be identifying even more areas we are looking at a period of about 3-4 years working together with DBSA and the municipalities and provinces to take the program through. We have been living in a budget of 189 million so far, and this 189 million will cover only 6 of the 10 identified industrial parks. Fortunately, the DGI is also giving us an additional budget for the new financial year, which will then assist us in completing the 6 that we have started with now, and also starting with the 4 of the 7. And we do hope that in future we'll get even more budget to target another list of industrial parks that will be identified through this partnership we have created with DBSA and the provinces. And the purpose of the program really, as it's stated there, is to revitalize South African old industrial parks, allowing them to serve as catalysts for broader economic and industrial development in their host regions. I have to say, Chair, some of these industrial parks are in a very bad state. If I can make an example of Timbaza in the Eastern Cape. So Timbaza, it will go beyond the issues of just revitalizing. We will have to have a long-term plan that we will develop together with the province and ECDC as the owners of the park to ensure that we use other incentives of government to incentivize enterprises, businesses to relocate to areas like Timbaza. Revitalization itself on its own won't help. So for the success of this program, really, it's very important, as I'm stressing, that we form a stronger collaboration with the provinces and the municipalities. Quickly, the objectives of the program to accelerate economic development, to create jobs in manufacturing-related areas and sectors, to remove areas related to infrastructure, market access, and institutional and support them, level competitiveness through other incentives of government. We're also looking at support these firms through incentives like the incubation support program, enterprise development support, even cooperative development support to increase the competitiveness of these tenants in the industrial park. And as I said, these are the phases for the program in terms of how we're going to implement this revitalization program. The first phase, as I said, is about security issues, fencing, street lighting, top structures, because some of the top structures are falling apart, so in partnership with the municipalities, we will be assisting them with structures and fiscal electricity requirements that is needed. But this is just the basic structure of the program. It depends on the nature of the park itself. You might find that what we are talking about here is phase two. Like in phase two, we are saying engineering design and construction of new and existing roads. You might find that other parts will say to us, look, dealing with the road, the problems of the roads and, you know, the potholes is something that we have to start with now as phase one. We can't wait for phase two. So we find that in other industrial parts, phase one will also include some of the elements that are in other phases as they appear in front of you here. This is a list of approved industrial parks. These are the 6 that we have started with, Jefferson and honorable members, and the budget so far that we have, as I said, we have 189 million rand that was approved for these parks. And these budget according to what is needed in each of these industrial parks. In the Eastern Cape, we have two, Bulindlela and Queen Industria. KwaZulu-Natal is Itelde, Free State, Buchabelo, Northern Swabalefi, and Limpopo is Seshego. And these are the budgets so far that have been approved and utilized. This does show the state of these industrial parks. As you can see, Chairperson and honorable members, some top structures are falling apart, only the basic framework is there. Some they don't have fencing, some they don't have a boom gauge and at the entry point of the park, and anybody can just walk in, even if it's got no business to do in this park. I'll let my colleagues go deeper now into the phases. This is just a phase one deliverable. Stinette, if you can just check the numbers from these phases.
Thank you and good morning. This is basically the scope that we are covering on the first phase. One of the critical elements that we found when we did the scanning and met with the owners of the parks was that the crime rate is very high. So when a tenant moves out, immediately you find that there's vandalism of the buildings, specifically around issues of electricity supply. They will steal the cables. In some instances, even remove the bricks. So the first component talks to your fencing. It's a perimeter fence, and the type of fence is also critical because it's one that should not be able to be just cut off or removed. We will also be installing CCTV cameras, and at the entry of the park, there will be some access control. In most of the parks, you find that there's pedestrian walk-in, so there's also access control for pedestrians, but there are systems that we'll be using, like cards, that the employees will be providing. Street lights, of course, are critical. Some of the parks, we find that they did have the initial infrastructure, like they would have the high mast lights, but they were no longer functioning. So what was there that could be fixed is being fixed. If it was not there, it would then be installed. Waste management, because it's a health issue, is also has been included in the first phase. And as the DDG said, where there are other critical issues that need to be attended to immediately, that also we have covered. In terms of completion, we have prioritized the program. And it has been indicated as urgent, and we have already seen results. For example, in Botshabelo, where we have already started and are completing. In fact, this week we are expecting them to finalise. We were told that tenants that had already indicated that they'll be moving out, as soon as they realised that there's this revitalisation problem going on, they cancelled their notification. So we are seeing the program as retaining jobs within those areas where they had been losing jobs. So we are expecting to finish the first in April, and the last one towards June, and it's only just for the first phase that we are talking to.
Chairperson, our presentation ends there. We are ready for any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm sure it's one of the most shortest presentations, very straight and sexual from the department. Members, that it's open now for discussion, questions, and comments. We'll start with Honorable Lewis, Honorable Estrelzen, Honorable Koronoff, and Honorable Mantashe in that order. Thank you.
Can you give us some idea of what businesses are located in some of those first parks that you spoke about that are being dealt with first? What amazes me to locate there, so far away from their markets, so far away from the cities, so far away from infrastructure. So what are the kind of businesses that are actually located there, and how are we going to try and attract new businesses to these parks? Because ultimately, without a healthy demand for space in these parks, they're never really going to be revitalized, are they? So I'd like to just discuss that in a little bit more detail. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I've basically got the same concern, but some of these old industrial parks, I think the one here, Babalehi, I'm not sure. I remember one, Haman's Kraal, I don't know if this is the same one. There used to exist quite a comprehensive industrial park there, and it is a bit falling apart. So looking at the budget, I also am concerned, you know, what will the tax incentives be? All these special economic zones that, that the government is creating is revolving around tax benefits for companies investing in these industrial parks or economic zones. But the benefit is only for 10 years. And it takes longer than 10 years to set up a business and to build these things. And all the time, while the company is starting, the clock will be ticking, the thing will be building. And that's a concern for me. And Chair, if I could please, Adam, if I could take your attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two questions, two things. Who owns the land currently, you know, where these development is going to be being done on? And then, is the DTI happy that there are approved budgets by the various agencies, either the municipalities or the development agencies, who's going to run these parks, whether they have the budgets to run it properly? And then, thirdly, when you have done the work, have you tried to involve the local communities in creating jobs, or was it big companies coming from outside doing the jobs?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Honorable Koronov has covered me, because I wanted to check. Much as we are so excited about you in the reindustrializing our areas, which businesses have shown interest? Because we can't just raise the colors and leave strikes outstanding. We are excited because we think that jobs will be created from the very initial stages of the program. But what are the assurances that there will be business coming in? We have identified some, because some in the Queen Industria, sorry, that name is not Queen Industria, it's Queen Industria. There's no I. There has been furniture factories that are just about to close down. Are you able to assist those communities to run their own furniture manufacturing factory, or what are you going to do? And we appreciate it, because you combine the two, as Berlin and Queenstown industrial zones, you have broken the apartheid arrangement of separate development. But what are the real businesses that you're taking in there? We can have expected, because for us it was life before they died. So their revival is to the benefit of the poor. So we can't fight that development. But what are the businesses that you guarantee that are coming in there, or that have shown interest in coming into those industrial zones? Thank you.
From my part, just one comment and a question maybe. As you say that the department, which is correct, cannot do this alone. You have strategic partnerships. I do understand with your other fellow institutions within DTI, and including DPSA. My worry is around especially when it comes to implementation, local came from the shared government. No, you know these provinces most of the time, and especially local government, there's a lack of capacity. And also, once these monies go to coffers of provincial government, they are open sometimes to be diverted to other, you know, priorities. So I'm happy with the DBSA. I know DBSA, especially on infrastructure, has been helping much, very much, in the provinces and local governments, who actually takes control of this project. Is the department directly in control? Is there, you are not falling in a situation where you just disperse money to local government or to provinces? After that, you deal with problems where money has been misused. That's one. Secondly, as you are on the question of the security, vandalism, theft, criminality in these parks, as you show that you are putting up security and some measures, the aspect I didn't see is the aspect on physical security. Physical companies. You can have all those CCTVs and what. I've not seen who will be manning these boom gates and patrolling around to avoid any of people who want to take chance of these criminals in the park. Yeah. Just before that, Honorable Moxetan.
Sorry, Chair, I apologize. I was late. Tectonians and their inability to drive frustrates me at the best of times. But look, I know the Honourable Hill Lewis has asked the question, what is the reason for people or businesses to go and invest in these parks? But I want to give you a great example of why the Isitebi Park failed. The infrastructure, the roads in that area are terrible. It is impossible to do business in an area that is not only just remote, but becomes inaccessible during certain times of the year. So unless there is, in my mind, an incentive through the local municipalities or district municipalities, either via rates rebates or rebates against electricity or water, coupled with infrastructure upgrading around those specific areas. I'm sure that Honourable Mantosh will be well aware of the state of the roads around Queenstown. When it starts to rain, the roads fall apart. So there has to be an integrated approach with provincial government and local government. And unless there is a three-pronged approach with incentives from local municipalities, I'm not sure how you're going to get the textile industries that left Esitebi and actually went to Lesotho. That's where they went, because of the incentives that the Lesotho government was offering. I'm not sure how you're going to get them back. So I'd really be interested what the plan is on those two fronts, infrastructure development with the other two spheres of government and the incentive program to get them back. Thank you.
I just want to correct one thing. I am a Queenstonian. There are no roads falling apart in Queenstown. It's not true. And we appreciate the park scene because the northern part of the Eastern Cape, where Queenstown is a farming area. There are farms, we have maize, bells, we have sorghum, we have everything. We are the biggest producers of livestock. So we have a lot of things to do inside those parks. If you can just attract people to come and be inside the parks. But the roads in Queenstown are solid. We may have a few, in particular when you go to Esbeleni, one road inside the Queen's Park, but you can't say Queen's Park roads are falling apart. it's incorrect. Thank you.
Mr. Chairperson, thanks very much. I think the questions by the honorable members are valid. I'll just take a few, and then my colleague will take the rest of the questions. I think the members here are right. What we are doing here, this is revitalization at the start.
You know, like you said, even with the infrastructure and all these things, you know, electricity, light, we're all at the But we are developing a policy. There's a dedicated unit within the DTI that is looking at industrial park now on a long-term basis, developing a policy and strategy. We are going to consult with other government departments at national, even the treasury, in terms of looking at how we could develop some incentives dedicated to industrial parks. As you all know, the SEZs are also industrial parks, but the SEZs, now there is a suite of incentives to develop them and attract investors there. We have to look at industrial parks now, because why? Industrial parks are in the rural areas where a lot of people staying in those areas and there are no jobs. So we have to look at a program, long-term program, with incentives, you know, in collaboration with other departments. Because when it comes to the issues of roads, really, that's not the mandate of the DTI. But in this first phase of revitalization, we are forced to deal with the roads in those identified in that program. But long-term, we have to involve SANRA, Department of Transport, other institutions. Yes, the success, like we said, the success of these industrial parks will really rely on the buy-in by the local communities, by the local government. Otherwise, the CHI alone is thinking at the national. There's nothing we can do. We can provide those incentives, but the buy-in must be at the local level. People must own this thing and look after it. See, that is why Senator will go into the details. For this revitalization, we have formed committees that involve the municipality, the communities down there, to ensure that they are abreast of what is happening. If people are putting fences, as you see on the board there, you know, people understand why there is a fence putting around in the park and all these things. So that people don't vandalize this thing at night, come back and all this. It also touches on the question you asked, Chair, about the physical security to be patrolling. This is part of the plan. This is what we are negotiating with the agencies that are responsible, the corporation responsible for this industrial park. Look, on top of the security we are talking about, there must be men security, you know, walking and patrolling and ensuring that nothing is happening in this national park. So, yes, in short, what I'm trying to say, we just hope that with the effort we're going to put in discussing with the Treasury and other government departments, we are hopeful that we're going to come with dedicated suite of incentives now for the industrial park moving forward. Because really, like the honorable members are saying, there is no way that just to revitalize and then we hope that people will come in. But what is encouraging is that in some of these industrial parks, because the search phase has come to an end, we have put the fence and electricity and everything, we are seeing a turnaround in terms of occupation rate, you know, increasing. But I want to mention that in many of these industrial parks, and a lot of members, the occupation rate is still very high. Like, if I'm not mistaken, they told us that the occupation rate is 95%. And the last time we were there, I think that was 2 months ago, the occupation rate was at 95%. And what we what type of industry that are in here. What is interesting for us as the Department of Trade and Industry is there are manufacturing businesses in that. A lot of services, companies are dealing with this, but manufacturing forms a big component in many of these industrial parks. But again, my colleagues will give the details. The land in this, as far as I can remember, but Vinegar will confirm it, is owned by the local government. Well, these industrial parks are owned by the agencies in the provinces, the economic development agencies in the provinces. We are trying to twist the arms of these municipalities to put aside some of the budget for to supplement the allocation that we have from the DTI to develop these industrial parks further. But the money that we have, Chair, it doesn't go to the municipalities or the provincial government. The money that has been allocated here, through the program we have designed with DBSA, we transferred to DBSA. DBSA, they use their internal processes, to acquire the contractors, to employ people, to do whatever that needs to be done down there. And what is good about it, and we have stressed this with the DBSA, is that they have to procure local companies to provide those services that are needed to upgrade these areas. And yes, communities, like I've said, are involved. Sineke from the DTI and NSG and DBSA, from time to time, they go together with the municipality, meet, and then discuss issues with the community, just to bring them up to speed of what is happening. As part of this long-term plan I'm talking about, I can make an example of what is happening with the Eastern Cape. What they are talking about, Vulindlela or Kimbazo, we will have to find a way of designing programs where we ask the local government and the provincial government to put aside some of the business through their procurement contracts and give it to the businesses that are located in this industrial park. As part of the incentives, and attracting people to come into this industrial park. ECDC has started it to ECDC, the Eastern Cape government, Eastern Cape provincial government, they started a program of looking at what type of procurement they can put aside for people who will be locating in some of these industrial parks we are referencing in the Eastern Cape. So I'll leave some of the questions to the Deputy Government for the CIO.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think the DDG has covered most of them. I'll just add and maybe give examples. In terms of manufacturing that is happening in the parks, you have the likes of Whirlpool. And the interesting thing there, you will have Whirlpool who is providing the fridges, and the neighboring firms around it will find provide the components and supply work. So there is good potential for this not only to happen, that is, for example, in Isipetet, but in the other parts where there is less activity. Now, once we bring in the incentives, once we improve it, we are hoping that this methodology is used elsewhere. We've got the likes of Nestle is in Babelefi, and Babelefi is in Hammanskraal, so it's the name of the area is Hammanskraal, but the park itself is called Babelefi. We have textiles in Botshabelo, and as the DG mentioned, some of the parks, most of them do have a very good occupation rate. Others are lower than others, for example, Dima Distance and the extent to which is at. The land ownership, at some point there was a move towards selling some of the plot. But then that was stopped. So a majority of the plots within the park are state owned. So we are revitalizing what actually belongs to the state, owned by the provincial agencies, the likes of your Free State Development Corporation, MEGA in Mpumalanga, ECDC in the Eastern Cape. We have spoken to the procurement process. The procurement process and as well as stakeholder management in the park. What we do is we have a protocol agreement between the DPI, the DPSA, and the park management themselves. And this actually spells out how we are going to go out there and implement the program. And as indicated, critical that it must be a local program and not a national program. So whatever can be procured locally is procured through the structure based within that specific area. And it's not limited just to procurement, but you do need to engage the community because this is something that is coming into their area. If they're going to suddenly close this gate, what does this mean to them if they used to walk, you know, just freely walk through? So we engage the community quite extensively and get them involved in the whole program. The roads are very critical in terms of accessibility, that's very correct. We cannot have business if the infrastructure is not in place. And that's why the roads have been included as part of one of the phases in terms of our implementation. The work or the negotiations that we are doing are at a very early stage. We had a workshop where we invited all the concerned parties in terms of implementation, and that was only the beginning. And that was to determine, is this something worth initiating? Is there a chance for sustainability beyond just our intervention? And the next phase now is actually to twist the municipalities up. For example, how do we handle the issue of grades in the park? Is it reasonable to charge what you are charging? How can we make it a rebate to the occupants or to the park? It's also very important for the parks because the parks are managed by the agency, that the management is also improved. So there's also a long-term plan for a capacity building program for proper management of the parks because we are looking at sustainability in the long term. I think there's some.
Chair, I'm deeply disturbed by what I've heard and not heard. There's 190 million rand that's been budgeted for this park, for these parks. There is no business plan on the table. There are no commitments from local government or provincial government. There is just the idea of engagements or twisting arms. Now, in the corporate sector, there is no way that you would go and spend an amount of money like this without a feasibility study on the table and without a business plan. And I am very, very hesitant with what I see, because we will spend 190 million rand and in 5 years' time you will see the pictures of that are on page 9 and page 8. I promise you we will be back to that space and we will be 190 million rand poorer for it. And so, Chair, I really want to implore this committee that before we endorse this plan or before we approve such a presentation that's before us, that a costed business plan and feasibility study is brought back to this committee. We understand what the commitments are from local government, what the commitments are from provincial government, and we have a list of interested businesses that are ready to commit to this. Because on the one hand, we're cutting down on incentives for businesses that can actually create jobs and that can contribute to the economy. And on the other hand, we're prepared to spend 190 million rand and we have no idea what it's going to do. So, Chair, that is my appeal to the committee, and before we move forward on this project.
Thank you.
question that has not been responded to. I said there was a manufacturing company in that industrial zone, I believe, that is about to close. There's a department prepared to rest that company so that you can be seen to be supporting manufacturing, as you are saying. It's critical for me because if you revitalize it, then same the companies that are dying inside. Is it possible that you can do that for that area? I make a reminder, say, I've never had this committee approving presentation. I don't know. We have never approved this presentation before. We have listened and we have never had. Can I be reminded, please?
Honorable Renaud?
You know, Chairperson, as I see this, this was a presentation of what has happened. But maybe, you know, the next phase is, and maybe we should invite back the department, at the next phase, you must unpack for us a little bit, you know, have you, you know, 7th, 9th, April was last week, so have you, are you opening up in the Free State? And then just give us a progress report, you know, what is the vacancy rate, where does we stand with the operating budgets from the either the municipalities or the local agencies trying to run this, and you know, and we take it the progress from there. You know, you've spent the money now it must be over to the DTI to put in your energy to make sure the money is working for the community.
Honorable Lewis, then Honorable Professor.
Chair, I'm still not hearing the fundamental business case for these parks. These are an artificial creation of the apartheid government that was trying to relocate or dislocate business to the so-called border areas of the old so-called homelands. Now, on the one hand, the DTI is spending 200 million rand doing this. On the other hand, they're spending a lot more money developing the SEZ program. Now, we know, for example, that Chris Hani Municipality in the Eastern Cape has applied for SEZ status. I don't know if that's going to be approved. We haven't heard yet. But if they are granted SEZ status, this is going to be, these parks in the Eastern Cape are going to be blown out of the water because the incentives in the SEZs are far bigger than you can ever offer in these industrial parks. You know, some improved security and some cameras or whatever those incentives are. I'm still not hearing the fundamental business. Why do we want to preserve this artificial manufacture of a forgotten time instead of focusing our efforts on the SEZ program and focusing our budgets there? I mean, I'll give you an example from the Western Cape, the one example that I'm most familiar with. Even Atlantis, which is just outside of a major city, it's 50 k's from here, it is so difficult to attract businesses to Atlantis that you have to come up with the most extravagant and generous incentives, which you are well aware of because many of those incentives you as a department are offering. And still, it's very difficult to make Atlantis work as an industrial zone. But we have to keep on trying because there's obviously tens of thousands of people that were just relocated there by the apartheid government. Now, here you're trying to do the same, but they're not anywhere near to a major port, they're not anywhere near to a major city, they're not close to the markets where they want to sell their goods. For me, I just really struggle to see a business case for some of these parks, and I must share the concern that I think we're going to sink 190 million rand into a project that, not through any fault of your own, but just because of the fundamentals, it's very difficult to make a business case for the success of.
Thanks, Chair, and I must apologize that I came in late, so I missed the presentation from the presenters, so I'm trying to put together, you know, half of the argument, if you will. But the point is that in the Eastern Cape, the Free State and Limpopo, those funds have been spent. All right, the budgeted allocation have been spent on those three parks in their entirety. I don't know what the return on investment has been. I can't see in this presentation how many businesses have invested there, how many jobs have been created there, and similarly for the other projects where money has been spent, and then into the next financial year, there's no business case for any of these amounts of money that have been spent. So, you know, I would say that as a committee, we have every right to drill down into each case and find out what is going on. Because if there is nothing coming back from this money that's being spent, if all we're doing is building a couple of fences and installing some CCTV cameras, for me, I can't see how there's a return on investment, let alone an investment from a company in those areas. And I think that we need to ask that the DG come back with the two presenters and explain to us what is going on in these parks. Because I think that we're trying to, as the Honourable Hill Lewis has said, recreate something that should never have been created in the first place. And for me, that is a great concern. And I think that in a year's time or 2 years' time, we're going to have a 190 million rand headache on our hands. And we're going to then likely have to answer to those businesses who can create jobs, who can increase manufacturing, and say to them why we couldn't help them with incentives. So I think that we have a lot of work to do on this, and I don't think it's good enough for us as a committee just to note this presentation and say thank you for coming here. I think we need more information, and we need to know that before any more money is actually spent in these parks.
Thank you. I think what we should do in the department, once you answer other questions. But I think maybe members are saying we might have to again engage with you. But I think what you should, on the questions, some of them raised, you need not necessarily answer them now here on the business case or of the feasibility study, or how many businesses have committed so far, commitment of local government. Or I think what you can do for us, so that when we invite you back, we can have that information and engage with you. If maybe in 3 days' time you can send that information through through the secretary of the department, all these questions which are raised here, which are, I think are important, around mostly because all of them center around costing of what costs really are we getting into in this industrial park. So I think on those ones you might, I think you should just prepare a brief for us on that. You send it to us through the committee secretary. We go through that so that even if we plan as a department, I mean as a committee and oversight towards that information, and even when we are engaging with you for the second time, which for some of the things are provoked by the presentation. And also I think for the members maybe to be clear, you'll know that you are coming from a background which these industrial parties, their purpose we know from the previous government was to try to create an impression to the world that there's a, some sort of an independent economy which is separate from the South African economy. So there will always be this question. I will not reinventing that. But I think the question which we must answer is, do all this, as you have mentioned, that you mentioned, I think, the Divazawa, the struggling there, do we have to revitalize all of them without looking into whether they will be able to stand on its own? You can see the case on the Queenstown one is within infrastructure, can through, you talk about port, they will actually have access to that. So those are the cases of things which we have looked at. So that when you come back, we actually we were able to take away this because of this. This was artificially created by the previous apartheid government. Whether now it will work or whether because the idea of this industrial park in those areas, which are so depressed, is an important idea. But where is it still valid that we put in the same, put them in the same place, or we leave those ones who are there, or we don't choose, we do choose which one can work? So I think maybe when you come there, those questions, forward that information to us, so that we are able to engage. When we call you, we are prepared to engage with you. But you can answer those which maybe you can answer. And one tricky question, you spoke about park management. This park management, who is involved in this park management? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think the committee will be pleased to know that, you know, of those that we have identified, I would say it's only Timbaza that is really a ghost town. These industrial parks, you'll be surprised, they are very vibrant. They are entrepreneurs, enterprises doing their daily business in these industrial parks as we speak right now. But what is failing, Chair, is that the infrastructure, which is the role of government to provide, the infrastructure is falling apart. But businesses are there. This is what is good about it. It's not that we are revitalizing, you know, the white elephants, something that can never work. No, they are working right now. Like we mentioned, the occupancy rate of some of these industrial parks, they are working. But if you look at the side of government, which is the provision of the infrastructure, that is where it's working. That's why then there's this need to provide the infrastructure for even more businesses to come into this. Yes, some of the industrial parks will need really a huge effort from side of government in terms of bringing back the incentives. Why? Again, because in these industrial parks, although they were established for those reasons of apartheid, but the fact of the matter is people are there around huge communities, no jobs. The issue, the problem of migration of people from these areas to the three main centers of industrial activity, economic activity in South Africa, is exactly as a result of infrastructure falling apart in these areas and nobody taking care of that. So we are trying to change that so that we also deal with the issue of people migrating from these areas to the industrial park. On the business case or the business plan, whatever you can call it, and honorable members, for the revitalization program, we do have a business plan. We do have a detailed business plan that we developed ourselves together
with DBSA, all the details, even the engineering stuff is there. But if honorable members would want to see now for each and every land whether there is a return, that I cannot say that will be in the business plan. Because obviously, from our understanding as government, although you can always say the principles of commerce also applies to us, but when we do our business plan, government provides incentives, government provides infrastructure to assist entrepreneurs, you know, to develop, you know, and thrive. There is no way we would have calculated now for each and every rand of this 189 million, we will say this is a return. You see? Because it's a long-term plan. It's all about ensuring that we facilitate the development of local economies through the federalization, through the incentives that we hope we'll be able to gather together, working with the treasury and the like. But if you want to know now whether for the 189 million there is a return that we have calculated and we can confirm it, I don't think we can be able to do that. To get a municipality to confirm whether they will be able to put a budget aside to ensure the sustainability of the data budget that we can get. And some of the municipalities, as Dina can confirm now, they have already committed themselves into the long-term sustainability of this work. It is a requirement from our side, or a condition from our side, that the municipality and the province must ensure that these don't turn into the infrastructure we are putting there, don't turn into or don't go into waste. So I'm trying to explain the issues of the business plan, Chair, is there. But if you are looking at the business plan in terms of that kind of commercial eye of a private business where a person say I'm investing a rent, I'm going to get this return, it's not that, Chair. But maybe it's just our approach that from ourselves, we see ourselves as government that must provide and facilitate the environment for the business to thrive. Yes, we have to account for each and every cent, like Honorable McPherson is saying. But we can provide all those details, Chair. Unfortunately, we don't have them now. Honorable Mandasha, on the issue of the company you're talking about, yes, there was a meeting, as far as unfortunately I was leaving last week, but in the sense there was a meeting with the DG about the very same problem you're talking about. And within the DGI, we are trying to assist that company.
In terms of the park management, Chair, the respective industrial parks have within the park a team that operates the park. So you find they have their own maintenance units, they would have their own fire station. They have a fire station, but they have a management unit, and it varies from park to park. But our intention is also to strengthen that team because we are looking at the sustainability in the long term.
Thank you very much. I'm sure you'll, as we have said, you'll send that information to the Secretary of the committee. We'll take it from there whether to again call you. But if there are no other questions, thank you very much for your presentation.
Okay, sorry, when they send us the information, can they also include the vacancy rate?
Put the vacancy rate in there. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for your presentation. Now, members, we will, I'm sure the Parliamentary Budget Office have arrived now. We will now go to the briefing by Parliamentary Budget Office on our budget vote.
to this committee to present at this committee. Just to apologize for Prof. Jayeti's out of the country at the moment. So I'm Leah Orlandi. I'm the Deputy Director for Policy in the Budget Office. Next to me is Rashad. He's our economist, and then we also brought our intern, she's Abigail Stiffling. She's only out of December, she's still with us. We still hope to keep her for a bit longer. Just as an introduction, you know that the Budget Office has been established just to support the Appropriations and Finance Committees, but we do support other committees as well. If we've got the time and the capacity, if we get in requests from the other committees. And the aim of this presentation is basically just to present or to provide the members with information in terms of how the national budget has been appropriated to the three spheres of government and the changes that have been made to fiscal policy and how these changes will affect this department or affected this department already. We will also try and show members where these changes have been implicated or how it implicates and how it has been introduced in this department. Further, we want to show you some of the just highlights in terms of the expenditure and performance of this department for further discussion. But just also to note, we are not the sector specialist for the trade and industry. So the analysis that we did is basically on the numbers. I'm going to hand over to my colleague Rashad. He's our economist and he will do the first section of the presentation for us and then I will do the budget analysis.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. So as Nelia mentioned, I'm just going to talk us through some of the highlights, if you like, that are relevant for this committee from the budget, and we'll go through some high-level numbers before Nelia gives us slightly more detail. Slides over there. So I'm going to talk through quickly, quite briefly, around Africa's fiscal policy, because it kind of sets the scene for where we find ourselves right now. Both with regards to the national budget, and obviously it has implications for this this committee's relevant department, that being trade and industry. From 1994 to about 2007, South Africa's economy performed pretty well. There were years where growth was actually about 5%, that's 2006. And we were able to pay down a fair amount of the debt we inherited from apartheid. We even had pretty strong revenue growth. We ran budget surpluses in many years. And debt overall was quite low, and that in a sense created fiscal space for the country. Fiscal space being the ability of the country to just increase or ramp up expenditure without much strain. Then 2008-2014, following the financial crisis that started in the US in September 2008, we obviously felt the effects of slower growth. Government stepped in over here in a significant way, increased expenditure, increased borrowing to try and keep the economy ticking, and to a certain extent it works. However, growth hasn't recovered to the pre-2008 period level or average of 3.3%. And as a consequence, fiscal space was eroded. So we increased our spending, we moved into deficit, and we increased our borrowing to fund increased capital and consumption spending. Since this period, what government has tried to do is that try to maintain a counter-cyclical policy stance, which is essentially increasing spending to keep the economy growing. However, we've reached a point where we can't continue doing this indefinitely, primarily because of high levels of debt. And so, post-2014, we now see a strong push towards fiscal consolidation, trying to reduce our debt as a portion of GDP. The current fiscal policy stance, essentially, the central focus is to stabilize debt as a share of GDP. Since the previous budget, government has tried to aim for 3.8% of GDP, but the current year, narrowing it down to 2.4%. This is obviously necessary, given where we are right now, and given we can't continue borrowing indefinitely. Rating is then also featured as a key concern over here. However, it's important to note that this isn't an austerity budget, austerity defined by real reduction in, in expenditure. We still have expenditure growth, albeit expenditure growth at a slightly slower rate of growth. Although some categories will experience a reduction, a real reduction in growth. Okay, so what the government is trying to do, what we mentioned, system consolidation earlier on. Essentially, there are several steps it's trying to take to try and maintain or try and reduce debt as a share of GDP. One important component of this, and this can be seen in the graph, is a reduction in the expenditure ceiling over the medium term expenditure framework. It tries to reduce the expenditure ceiling by 25 billion rands over the medium term expenditure framework, and at the same time reprioritize. This is quite important. So there are many priorities of government, some are more urgent than others, and in the context of slower expenditure growth, one needs to put one's resources in the areas that are most important, either because socioeconomic objectives or because they're growth enhancing. The consequence of this lower expenditure ceiling, reprioritization, plus some revenue proposals, is that governments or SAFPRICA will reach a primary surplus, and this is the first time since 2008-2009, and that is intended to stabilize over the medium term as a share of GDP. This reprioritization is something that requires serious discussion and application. So compared to the 2015 MTBPS, government expenditure overall is reduced by 0.8%, and the components that allow for this reduction overall is one's compensation of employees of 1.5%, goods and services, and transfers as well of 2.5 and 1.7 respectively. However, it's not just national government that's making the effort, so to speak, also provincial government and local government also bear part of the burden. And you can see local government is the most significant as a percentage. The reprioritization of the spending has two components to it. One is obviously the recommendations from expenditure reviews. Two is National Treasury have been doing some modeling on remuneration budgets, and the preliminary results are now informing this reprioritization. Thirdly, and I think most emphasis is required over here, is programs with a history of underspending have had to or have experienced changes to their budgets. However, it's important to note over here that while the program may not be performing, and that's by which you mean underspending, it may not necessarily be the most prudent response and the most effective response is to reduce that program's budget. What may be more useful is to actually look at why there's underspending and try and address the root cause rather than just saying, hey, they're not spending, let's reduce their budget. Primarily because the underspending may be in an area that's actually a quite an important socioeconomic or growth-oriented priority. Over the medium term, there are some changes and some new priorities that have to be funded. Obviously, last year, and the effects of that I experienced this year, is an increase in higher education allocation, obviously the new development bank with the BRICS countries, small business development, as well as an increase PME planning, monitoring, and evaluation, as well as an increase in the contingency reserve compared to what was previously the contingency reserve. Important then to ask the question where questions for the committee to in terms of application of mind to the presented budget and its implications for the department. Where have the cuts been made? What's important to note over here is what will the effect of these cuts be on service delivery? If we have X amount of resources producing Y outcome, if it's slightly less than X less 5%, will it result in the same outcome? Will it result in the outcome being affected adversely? If so, then you know no efficiency gains have been realized, and that's what's quite important over here to note. Is the department able to fully employ further cost-saving measures, and if so, where? Will it be compensation? Will it be goods and services? Will it be, you know, other areas? Will it be transfers? How will the funded activities of the department help to enable enough environment for economic growth? And this requires, you know, more detailed analysis in the sense that the areas where the department is spending, are these growth enhancing or are these, you know, growth neutral? Or in certain cases, could these resources have been allocated more efficiently elsewhere? Then more importantly, what are the implications of broader fiscal consolidation? And that primarily means lower budgets, how do we then absorb these? What we've got to VC, honourable members, is some work the PBO has been doing over the past couple of months. What we've looked at is the total spending of on these various areas within the economy, like general manufacturing, clothing and textiles, FTZ, sector-specific support, since 1994 to 2015. Obviously, given the shift and the creation of new departments, some of these functions now fall outside the ambit of trade and industry, that is to say small business and economic development. But what it does show us is that in real rand, that's 2015 rand, how much government has spent on supporting or foregone or allocated in terms of resources for supporting all of these sectors, that's general manufacturing, clothing and textiles, and the like. So we see a whopping 436 billion rand allocated of resources over the past 21 years. The overwhelming majority, more than two-thirds, is for the motor vehicles and components. That's the MIDP, now known as the APDP, and some other related incentives and support programs. Now, what is important to ask, the question we have to ask ourselves here, or as a committee in the role of oversight, is what have been the outcomes relative to the massive resources dedicated over the years? What has investment been like in these sectors? What are employment outcomes? What is its contribution to growth? And that also would be useful in informing further allocation for these sectors. What this shows over here, the green and the grey bars, is that all the resources allocated are not purely expenditure, that is to say, on budget, but some of it is off budget. So in the green components over here, you can see it's overwhelming, the larger share of resource allocated is actually tax expenditure. By tax expenditure, we mean tax foregone. So certain sectors are allowed tax breaks, tax incentives. Now, this could have been revenue that government would have raised, right? If you don't give them the tax incentives and you make certain other assumptions, you would have picked up this in terms of taxation. And that taxation, that tax revenue, could have been used to fund other socioeconomic priorities. And that's important to note, that it's not just on budget, but also off budget. And this shows an overall picture, the distribution between tax expenditure and actual rand expenditure. And also, if you compare the 2015 budget, almost 31% of that budget, 2015-16 budget, was actually dedicated over the past 21 years to supporting these industries. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel. I will do the rest of the presentation. So just to show you how the national government has reprioritized between the different departments, I didn't list all 40, but you will see I highlighted trade and industry. In 2015-16, 96 million has been taken away from this department. Over the medium term, it was 178 and 219 million that this department's allocation has been reduced. But you're not the only department which had to sacrifice some of the funds. You will see social development sacrificed in 2015, 1.2 billion. But social development also is one of the priorities. In the outer years, their budgets increased by 831 and 3.6 billion to make provision for the ECT priority. And then you will also see the high education budget has been increased, basically to make provision for the no fees of university students. In the next slide, I'm just showing how the department itself did the reprioritization between the different programs in the department. So you will see program 2 was reduced in 2015 already, and over the medium term, economic development zones has a lot of money has been shifted from economic development zones, and the biggest department or the program that has received funding is program 6, the incentive development and administration program. Industrial development actually also sacrificed a lot of money, has been shifted to other programs. This slide just gives you an overview of what is happening in the department in terms of historic expenditure and how the budget looks. So overall, you can see this department has got a history of under-expenditure. Specifically, when we look at social economic development, the money to another department or another program that can spend just because they transfer the money. So, yes, it's not that we totally agree with how departments reprioritize. Perhaps there are some work to be done to make sure that we spend the money in that area in terms of economic growth. And also just to mention on that one, Program 6 received most of the money, or most of the money has been reprioritized to Program 6. But that program, in terms of expenditures, might have been performed. But I also look back to the annual report, and this specific program has only achieved 13 of the 27 targets in 2014-15 in terms of performance, in terms of output. Before we move on to the expenditure trends for economic classification, I just want to indicate to you some of the guidelines that the National Treasury implemented in terms of the Cabinet resolution to cut costs on non-essential spending items. So Treasury did a guideline to provide the definitions for these specific items that might be the items that can be reduced, just to guide departments what to allocate to these specific items. In terms of consultants, you will see that if you allocate money for consultant, it must be for a professional person that provides technical and specialist advice. If they allocate money in terms of contractors, a contractor is the person that they appoint to provide services which are non-specialized, but it's something that it's not the core business of the department. In terms of catering, they've developed a few rules to say that if you have a workshop or a meeting that's more than 5 hours, you can use your catering budget for that. There are other meetings as well. If you get visitors from outside, you can use catering. And this specifically is one of the items that which is seen as non-essential and which we can cut down on. Entertainment allowances. It's not clear within this department when you look at that and the entertainment budget whether they've allocated the entertainment allowances to this specific item. So if they did, in some programs, then the allowances are really high because only specific officials qualify to get an entertainment allowance. So if you want to take a stakeholder for lunch, you can pay for him from your entertainment allowance. I've also added agency and support outsource services. This is when a third party carries out specific projects on behalf of the institution, and in most cases, it spans over more than one financial year. I'm just providing you with this information to make sure that the department also do the budgets in a credible way or in a realistic way in allocating funds to these items. This is the overall picture in terms of expenditure or the economic classification. You will see this department, because the compensation of employees' budgets, they've got a history of under-expenditure, and over medium term, there's a real peculiar trend in terms of the expenditure on compensation. What we found in the increases between 2014-15 and 15-16 was very high, and 15-16 to 16-17 also high increases in compensation without changing the numbers. Basically, the personnel numbers reduced from 2014-15 to 15-16 from 1,770 to 1,617 members in this department. And then you get this peculiar dip in 2017-18. I'm not sure why that reduction is happening, and you will also find this throughout the department in basically all the programs. Contractors has got a history of underspending on the adjusted budget, but you will see they estimate to spend $39 million in 2015-16, and then that budget is decreasing over the medium term by 23%. The question is this really realistic? Because they've got high over expenditure on their budgets historically. So the intention is to reduce on this budget because it's one of the items that has been identified for more efficiencies or to save some money. But when it comes to the adjustment period, they increase the budget. Historically, that was the picture. Operating leases for 2015-16, they estimated to spend $248 million, but that budget is also decreasing over the medium term. I'm not sure whether some of the contracts are coming to an end for that item in specifically. Training, they always underspend, the history of underspending on training, but the budget keep on increasing over the medium term. You can skip this one. I've spoken about this one. So just to highlight a few things in Program 1. Program 1, there's fast growing in the sub-program for the Director General and also for media and public relations. In terms of the compensation budget, this budget follows the same trend as the department as a whole. You get that dip in the middle year. In terms of the goods and services, just to mention to you an example in terms of the contractors. In 2015-16, they estimate to spend $27.8 million on contractors, but over the medium term it reduces to $8.3 million, $8.19 million. The question is whether this is really realistic or whether they will underspend in 2015-16, and then basically that money has foregone. It could have been spent on something else that could have created economic growth. In terms of the agency and support, I've shown, indicated in this slide specifically, in the previous period, this item increased by 176%, but it decreases over the medium term by 6.2%. So what does that mean in terms of the definition of outsourced services? If outsourced services normally runs over a span of more than 1 year, is this realistic, this reduction really realistic? Okay, we can skip. In terms of Program 2, there wasn't much. In terms of Program 3, the special economic zones, a lot of money has been taken away, as we've said. The compensation budget also follows the same trend, the reduction in the middle year. In terms of goods and services, specific items that I can mention is, in terms of the catering, in 2014-15, the actual expenditure was only 71,000, but this budget increases to 366,000 in the after year. In terms of consultants, you get the same picture. They could only spend 1.3 million in 2014-15, but it increases to 16 million over the medium term. In terms of stationery, this is the second smallest program 3, but the biggest proportion of the budget is allocated for stationery. Program 4 also experienced high reductions. It's the same trend in terms of the compensation budget, and there was nothing really in terms of the goods and services that I could highlight. In terms of Program 5, compensation, this is one of the budgets that didn't apply that strange, peculiar way of budgeting in reducing the budget in the middle year. Stationery also high increases over the medium term. And you can see in stationery in 2014, they only spent 216,000, but that budget is going to almost a million, sorry, in 2018-19. In terms of Program 6, this is also one of the programs that didn't reduce the budget in the middle year. Just to highlight, stationery increases by 28, almost 29% over the medium term. Let me see, okay. Yeah, by 53%. In terms of Program 7, some of the highlights in this program is this is really a peculiar way of determining a compensation budget, you can see the budget reduced by 18.5% over the medium term. So in 2015, they spent 168 million on compensation, but this budget is reducing to 91 million in 2018-19. And in the personnel table, there was no changes made to the numbers of personnel in this program. And what also links to this, I don't know what the plans are within this program, whether people are going to leave, whether they're going to be moved somewhere else or what. But if people are leaving, you should at least have been made provision for transfers to households if people are going to leave, if that's the plan over the medium term. Catering was also is increasing from 142,000 to 719,000 in 2018-19. In Program 8, yes, also personnel is following the same trend as all the others. Something to highlight in Program 8 is that the catering increased on average by 37% from 2014-15. So catering is still increasing despite the guidelines that have been issued by the National Treasury. Venues and facilities actually takes up 4.1% of the entire budget of this program. And the combination of consultants and contractors takes up 13% of this program's budget. And when we look at travel and subsistence, it increased by 7.7% over the medium term. And 6.6 million has been allocated for 2016-17-18. But what I want to mention here is that the amount is almost 400,000 more than the budget in Program 3 for travel and subsistence, who has double the amount of personnel members in Program 3. So that's just a comparison that I did with one of the other programs. Actually, it was a program later. Okay. The parliamentary budget did some work on the National Development Plan. So we did an assessment on all the outcomes. We're trying to see whether there's alignment between the National Development Plan and the medium-term strategic frameworks that have been developed by departments. And then we also looked at the performance as at the end of 2014-15, because that was the latest information that isn't available on the program of action. So we know that trade and industry is responsible for outcome 4, with all those departments listed. They indicated on the medium-term strategic framework that they will do the monitoring of the outcomes, they will develop an early warning system, and all of them will be responsible for reporting. So in terms of the outcome of the analysis that we did, in terms of the outcome, we found that some of the actions that has been identified in the National Development Plan hasn't been taken up in the medium-term strategic framework. So these are a list of some of the actions that they don't report on. There's no indicators for them. So it's in terms of the reducing of costs for the poor, reducing costs for doing business in through microeconomic reforms, develop proposals for acceptable minimum standards of living, removing the constraints for growth, and to position South Africa to attract offshore business services, and building some of our advantages to move to other countries. And the performance as at the end was only at 45% at the end of March 2015. This was just on the Program of Action report. The Program of Action report also, there's a lot of gaps in the report in terms of some departments did not report, so there might be performance, but they didn't report on them. And there's a lot of information missing. We don't have baselines to compare the progress with. And the progress that has been reported, we don't know where the sources come from and which departments contributed to the Program of summarize, we've seen that the country experienced low growth. We know that government's fiscal policy is to stabilize debt. We need to look at cost containment. We need to cut down on non-essential expenditure and operational costs. Government still supports capital expenditure. We need to look at where we're going to prioritize and reprioritize in specific towards economic growth and job creation. All spheres of government has been affected by these reductions. And the question to ask is also, did this department, after this presentation, do you think this department responded to the requirements of national government? And how can we improve performance and reporting? And just in terms of the consistency, what I showed you in terms of consultants, contractors, catering and entertainment, I couldn't really find that there's really consistency in terms of the definition, but also between how the different programs implemented the allocations or determined the allocations towards these items. Thank you.
Thank you very much for presentation. Members, that's the presentation. We can now ask questions and comments. Honorable McPherson, Honorable Mandashe, followed by Honorable Hill Lewis, Honorable Matisse, then Honorable Koranov. In that order, members.
Thanks, Jay. Let me first off say that this is outstanding work, and you know, I think that this is really the quality of work that we expect you know, from the Parliamentary Budget Office, and I just wish we could get our own internal department to give us, you know, quality analysis like this. So thank you very much. I just want to find out when you know, when you put these things to the department in terms of not complying with national treasury regulations, in terms of you know, travel costs, catering, etc. Is that ever communicated back to them when they formulate their budget, that in fact, you know, what you are budgeting for falls outside of treasury regulations? And if you do you get a response back from the department? And then also with respect to your NDP outcomes, I mean, I think that those are quite quite a wake-up call for us as a committee, that in fact the department is not even close to coming near the mark of what it should be doing. You know, when you say the that it's failed to position South Africa to attract offshore business services, building on the advantages by South African telecommunications. I mean, those are something that we get told we do well, when in fact your office finds that, you know, we can't even meet half of what's required of us in the NDP. Again, is that ever put to the department, and what responses do you get to that? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to comment the standing work that has been presented to us. But I just want to check on the on your summary. Despite all the things you have raised in the body of your presentation, why is the reduction in personnel compensation not highlighted in your summary? That which you said there's a reduction, but you don't know whether the warm bodies will be removed from the department, what is going to happen? Why is it on this summary? And they, when you speak to them, what do they say about the budget for consultants and contractors, which we already said long ago that they must be done away with? Thank you.
Thank you very much to your team from the PBO. I must say this presentation is excellent, and I appreciate the work that's gone into it. Your analysis of the actual cost and the opportunity cost of what the department has spent on manufacturing since 1994 is fascinating. These are numbers I haven't seen before. What you haven't done, and I completely appreciate that this is difficult, is to do the other side of the coin, the benefits analysis. And I would be fascinated to see a broader paper on unpacking these costs in some more detail and then juxtaposing them with the benefits of that investment. But certainly that number, 436.5 billion rand over 20 years, is an enormous sum of money. And then just to you, Mr. Chairman, I think that it would have been ideal to have someone from the department here today to respond. But I think we do need some answers on those reductions in compensation budgets in the medium term when there's no reduction in the number of employees. Mm. That doesn't seem right, and we need an explanation on that. And as the presenter said, that applies to all of the programs, but especially in Trade Export South Africa in Program 7, where that reduction is the greatest. So if we could get some kind of written response or something like that from the department to that anomaly, I would be grateful. Then also the huge reduction in the SEZ budget. I understand why it has taken some time to spend those budgets, so I'm not that concerned about the under expenditure because it's taken a long time to designate some of those SEZs. However, what does concern me is that money is now gone from the budget. So those SEZs that have now just been gazetted, and those who were very near to being gazetted, what happens to their budget allocations over the medium term? Are they now at the back of the queue? So I'd like an answer from the department on that. And then lastly, the 18.8% increase in compensation of employees across the board strikes me as odd because the public sector wage negotiation increase was effectively 10.5%. With including housing allowance and that kind of thing. So why is it that this department is increasing its compensation by 18.8% when the public sector is increasing its compensation by 10.5%? What's the reason for that discrepancy? I'd like an answer on that as well. Thanks.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Look, man, I don't know. Let me break ranks with my colleagues and not commend the work of the office, and that is for no apparent reason. I don't know against what should we measure the quality of the report. Presumably because I'm not a standing member of the committee, my colleague Honorable Shivambo might perhaps be in a different position to commend the work. The benchmark against which we are commending the work, something which I don't know. However, let me make some few comments here. Look, I think the office is giving us an information about the departmental performance and how we conduct its business. And this can only help to an extent that we take leave from the information they're giving us. Otherwise, the information and the work that they've done is meaningless if the department would not take any note of what they've observed. So I concur with my colleague here that it would have been good if the department is here so that they take note. Over and above them having to receive the report, that it would have been good if they listened to the presentation itself. Look, the cost containment guidelines by National Treasury are good, but they will be meaningless for as long as the department and government as a whole is not seen to be doing fiscally disciplined. So these cost-cutting containment measures will remain meaningless. We ought to have a department in government that is seen to be disciplined and exercises fiscal discipline to the latter. But that is not the case, unfortunately, as we speak now. Look, on program one, we are told that the fast-growing sub-program is the one that falls under the Office of Director General around areas such as media and public relations. I think this is not a good example of cost-cutting measures, because that department is not a line function department. It provides support services to line function programs. So why is what we are seeing the case? Why is it the case that this is a fast-growing sub-program? And I can tell you that it is in that department where a lot of rot is taking place, where even low-ranking officials learn how to put their fingers in the cookie jar through media and public relations and all of that, including catering for that matter. And we see that catering has been going up, expenditure on catering has been going up, despite that there are guidelines on cost-cutting and containment measures. So, well, I wouldn't really go in detail about commenting about the overall performance of the department and how it should focus future budget allocation and spending patterns. But it would be good if we were to see that much of the expenditure is directed at macro enterprises, is directed at supporting emerging small businesses. It's directed at adopting a strategy to utilize selective territory protection measures geared in helping and supporting macro enterprises. It becomes just an exercise for academic purposes for us to be sitting here, and we cannot see the real impact on the lives of the people on the ground. So perhaps the department should be considering that, and I hope it will also be spending some time to read your presentation. I think this is a good presentation. Thanks very much, Chair.
Honorable Cornus.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just firstly, you know, on the question by Honourable Hugh Lewis that we want to see the other side of the coin, you know, we've spent 200 and so much billion over 20 years. But, you know, is it fair to ask the Budget Office to do that job? You know, I don't think so. I don't think that was the intention of the Budget Office when we at Treasury started it off about 4 or 5 years ago. The Budget Office is so small if you compare it to other parliaments of the world that I'm astonished that you are able even to do this job. Now my second question, do you do this job for other departments or do you pick departments when you do this? And what is the primary source of your information? Is it not the Treasury? It looks like to me that you go to the thick book, you go to the various programs, and that you have just take out of that, out of the Treasury information given to us, you have unpacked it for us, and so on. So if that is the case, we could have done it on our own, but, you know, maybe you have just assisted us with that, and my thanks for that. But is it not a little bit then unfair to do it in such a way without the department having, you know, at the same time to say, because many of these matters came up when they come in front of us, and then we can question, and there is sometimes a good explanation why certain things are going up higher than it should go up, but, you know, this is what's lacking. working for me. I do not see the explanation, and maybe that is for our committee to make sure that if we interact, there must be a time after such a presentation for the department to come back and explain certain stuff. I do not, you know, the office of the Director General, I think it's a good office. But I don't know how they have compared with other departments in terms of media and public relations, and that they have just upped it. The Department of Trade and Industry is an important role player, you know, and they have to engage with the South African public. So did they do it not properly before? I don't know. I can only ask the department that. And then finally, if you look at the budget of DTI, obviously small business development was created, so science and technology, and many programs went out of DTI into those budgets. And if you take all those budgets combined, when it was still one department, you know, I would have loved to see, whether what did the real budget do when it was supposed to be still one department.
Thank you, members. I think maybe just to we should have maybe announced this part of the department's absence. I think the department was meant to be here. The COO, Ms. Colt, would have been here with us today, but he had to return to Pretoria due to the sudden death of Mr. Kumaran Naidu, which we know is our DTI Chief Financial Officer. The group chief financial office. So due to that happened just this morning, so she had to immediately go back to Pretoria. Otherwise, these questions, I think, which members are raising, really are not questions for you, are questions for them. And it's not you who should have invited the department. So on that, we want to make that apology to members. But the presentation, it helps us as a department, I mean as a committee, to interrogate the department on these areas. Definitely answers we can get from the department, why there's increase in other spending of other programs more than others, and some these issues where the staff, despite the staff is the same, but there is an increase which is happening. But the only question I will ask maybe the budget office, when you look into these different programs, do you take into maybe consideration the nature of work of each program, which might sometimes necessitate in others you see an increase, whereas in others you see, you know, especially the concern will be what has been pronounced by National Treasurer around the issues you raised here on those 5 to 6 points of being tried to reduce costs. So when you look into the whole budget, do you look into the nature of specific programs in that? And also on those areas which you said there has been a history of understanding, do you maybe, are you able to analyze what might be the reasons of that happening? Although we'll take this up also with the department, but the department might be able to answer better on that. Thank you.
I'll try and respond to a few of the questions or uncertainties. In terms of the first one, whether we do this for all departments, it's just impossible. We're only 6 analysts currently in the PBO. We can't do it. And we also don't directly liaise with national departments. We just support the Finance and Appropriations Committees. something, but I do know that the National Treasury, they also does analysis of draft budgets and give feedback to departments. Whether departments implement the feedback or recommendations, it's up to the department itself. In terms of the personnel, I actually should have put that in the summary because it's really, there needs to be further discussions in terms of what model did they use to determine these budgets. But there also is an indication in the budget document that they will work with Treasury and with the BSA to determine the budget over the medium term. But currently, the budgets are not realistic. So it might be good to have a discussion with them together with Treasury and the PSA in terms of how they're going to take the modelling further, which they've started. In terms of, Rashad can answer the actual cost and the benefits. In terms of that 18.8% increase, yes, you see in the compensation budgets, between 2014-15 and 15-16, there was high increases, as well as between 15-16 and 16-17, and we know that they underspend. They've got a history of underspending and compensation. In terms of the fiscal discipline and increases in Program 1, there might be good reasons for them increasing in media. I really didn't have time to go and look at each reason and compare the APP and targets in APP, whether that correlates with the budget. It was just impossible, and I also don't really know the business of this department. But in terms of the increase in the media, the only thing that I could find is that they say they need to do a lot of media reporting in terms of IPAP. So that might be the reason, I don't know, but in some cases I tried to find out by looking through the documents for reasons. In terms of Honorable Quirenhoff, yes, basically it's almost all the information is in the budget book. So I just went through each and every program and tried to highlight things that I think is of concern and needs to be discussed with the department itself. Even the national departments, or the framework of the budget, is so good they already do all the calculations for you. They already calculate the historic performance of the department. They calculate the growth of the medium term, even the proportions of the budget. It's just here and there that I've done a growth rate from 2014-15 over the medium term to show that huge increase from 14-15 to the over the medium term. Rashad can answer the one on the inside.
Okay. Thank you. So those slides that we just show you, it's something we're currently busy with right now. I think the Chair, Honourable Stubbs, knows about this work, some work we're doing for this committee as well as the Standing and State Appropriations Committees. We are in the process of looking at outcomes in terms of, you know, investments of benefit, if you like, as Honourable Hillo has made reference to, the benefit in terms of employment creation, in terms of investment, in terms of contribution to GDP. However, I think it's important to note that it's not a very clean comparison because there are many other factors affecting the economy as well. So one can't say, like, hey, because we spent 60 billion rands on the motor sector and we haven't seen any increase in terms of output or in terms of employment, this could have been despite that. It could have actually been worse, the counterfactual. So that's something to bear in mind. However, once this work is completed, we will contact this committee and we're more than willing and able to present to it, and I expect that to be in the next couple of weeks. Thank you.
Thank you.
As I mentioned when I started this presentation, is that we've looked at all of the incentives in the ambit of TTI. So prior to the establishment of the Small Business Center, as well as economic development, Nkula and Sika, SIDA, SIFA were all under DTI. So I looked at all of those real economy incentives across the board. So I didn't, it doesn't make sense to remove it from DTI when it was part of DTI for the budgets from 94 right through to about 2009.
I wanted to raise it as a concern. How can the office advise us and the ministry of measures to combat fiscal dumping? Look, there's a case in point in the Free State where a financing institute, the Free State Development Corporation, took about 13 billion to help in the bailing out of SAA. I don't know if Free State Development Corporation is a component of trade and industry. I'm not so sure. But how such incident can be prevented from an office point of view, so that we, as we do go about our oversight work, we're able to raise such matters and bring them to relevant people.
I'm sure maybe they will answer, but I think as far as I know, all these development corporations in provinces, they fall under provincial governments. But maybe in the question, in advising on that, because I'm sure we wouldn't know how does the development corporation of Free State relates to give money to building of SAA, which belongs to a national, it falls under public enterprise, national. You see, but maybe they, but as I was saying, they belong to provincial and government. But you can, if you have any information to share with us, you can.
I don't really have any knowledge of the Free State, but if there's a research that might come out of such a request, then the request can go to the Select Committee of Appropriations. This is how our processes work, and then they can forward it to our PROC, and then we can determine whether such research or investigation or analysis can be done in the office.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm sure you have helped us in analyzing the budget a lot and putting questions for discussion with the department. I think all members have said we appreciate your work. Thank you very much. Members, just before we close, I think we don't have a committee tomorrow, but what will happen, the office of the secretary of the committee will distribute the draft budget vote report for us to look at, which we'll have to formally consider it on the 19th. So members will receive that from, I'm sure, this afternoon or tomorrow, as from tomorrow, from the office. We
members, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.